Sometime in 2002, after watching a movie in a theater, me and one of my friends were waiting for the public transport to go home. I can't remember what exactly we were discussing, but what my friend said stuck with me for all these years. He said, "You and your fears are standing in each other's way. If you turn your face, the fear is not going anywhere. But if you stare back firmly, the fear will have no choice but to get out of your way." Welcome to A Walk Within, where we try to find connection between short stories and life experiences. I'm Anoop. Today we are going to discuss My Lord Bag of Rice, one of the Japanese fairy tale by Yei Theodora Ozaki, which I found to be really amazing at capturing imagination, and it also made me think of fear of failures. Following is a summary of the story and not a reading of it. I highly recommend you to read it yourself. You can find the link to the story in the description. Long, long ago, there lived a brave warrior in Japan, known to all as My Lord Bag of Rice. While his true name was something else, there is a very interesting story of how he came to change his name. One day, he grew tired of idleness and left his home in search of adventures, for he had the nature of a warrior. So he took his two swords, a huge bow, which was much taller than himself, and his quiver on his back, and started out. Before long, he came to the bridge spanning one end of a beautiful lake. As soon as he set foot on the bridge, he saw a huge serpent dragon lying right across his path. Its body was so big that it looked like a trunk of a large pine tree, and it took up the whole width of the bridge. The monster seemed to be asleep, with fire and smoke coming out of its nostrils. At first, the warrior was alarmed at the sight of this horrible reptile, as he has only two options. He must either turn back or walk right over its body. He was a brave man, however, and putting aside all fear, he went forward. He stepped on the dragon's body, then between its coils, and without even looking back once, he went on his way. He had only gone a few steps when he heard that someone was calling him from behind. He turned back, and surprisingly, Monster Dragon had entirely disappeared. In its place, he saw a strange-looking man who was bowing ceremoniously to the ground. The man had his red hair streamed over his shoulders and was surmounted by a crown in the shape of a dragon's head. The warrior knew immediately that this was no ordinary mortal, but still wondered about the strange occurrence. Where did the dragon go? Or had it transformed itself into a man? And what did the whole thing mean? While these thoughts passed through his mind, he had come up to the man on the bridge and said, "Was it you that called me just now?" "Yes, it was I, and I have an earnest request to make to you. Do you think you can grant it to me?" "If it is in my power to do so, I will. But first, tell me who you are." "I am the Dragon King of the lake, and my home is in these waters, just under this bridge." "And what is it that you have to ask of me?" "I want you to kill my mortal enemy, the centipede." He continued, "I have lived now for many years in this lake and I have a large family of children and grandchildren. For some time now, we live in terror as a monster centipede has discovered our home. And every night, it comes and carries off one of my family. I am powerless to save them. If it goes on much longer like this, not only shall I lose all my children, but I myself must fall a victim to the monster. I am, therefore, very unhappy, and in my extremity, determined to ask the help of a human being. For many days, with this intention, I have waited on the bridge in the shape of a horrible serpent dragon that you saw, in the hope that some strong, brave man would come along, but all who came this way, as soon as they saw me, were terrified and ran away as fast as they could. You are the first man I have found able to look at me without fear, so I knew at once that you were a man of great courage. I beg you to have pity upon me. Will you not help me and kill my enemy, the centipede? The warrior felt sorry for the Dragon King and readily promised to do whatever he can to help him. He asked where the centipede lived so that he might attack the creature at once. The Dragon King replied that it lives on the mountain, but it comes every night at a certain hour to the palace of the lake. It would be better to wait till then at the palace. So the warrior followed the Dragon King to the palace under the bridge. Never had the warrior seen anything so beautiful as this palace, built of white marble beneath the lake. Many fishes waited upon the Dragon King and his guest. The warrior was astonished at the feast that was spread for him. There were lovely goldfishes, dancers, and red carp musicians. The hours flew by till midnight, and the beautiful music and dancing had banished all thoughts of the centipede. The palace was suddenly shaken by a tramp, as if a mighty army had begun to march not far away. The warrior and his host rushed to the balcony. The Dragon King, trembling with fear, screamed, "The centipede! The centipede! Those two balls of fire are its eyes. It is coming for us. Now is the time to kill it." The warrior saw the long body of an enormous and horrible centipede winding round the mountains. The warrior showed no sign of fear and said, "Don't be afraid. I shall surely kill the centipede. Just bring me my bow and arrow." The Dragon King did as he was bid, and the warrior noticed that he had only 3 arrows left. He took careful aim and shot the arrow. The arrow hit the centipede right in the middle of its head, but instead of killing it, it glanced off harmlessly and fell to the ground. The warrior shot another arrow. Again, the arrow hit the mark and results were same. The warrior saw that he had now only 1 arrow left in his quiver, and if this one failed, he could not kill the centipede. Then suddenly, the warrior remembered that he had heard that human saliva was deadly to centipedes. But this was no ordinary centipede. This was so monstrous that even thinking of such a creature made one creep with horror. The warrior was determined to try his last chance. So taking his last arrow and first putting the end of it in his mouth, he fitted the notch to his bow, took careful aim once, and let fly. The arrow again hit the centipede right in the middle of its head, but this time, instead of glancing off harmlessly, it struck home to the creature's brain. The serpentine body started moving. The fiery light of its great eyes darkened to a dull glare like a sunset of a stormy day. The centipede fell. At last, the dreadful night was over. Day dawned beautiful and clear. The centipede was gone from the mountain. Everyone came out with joy, and the gratitude of the Dragon King knew no bounds. The whole family came and bowed down before the warrior, calling him their preserver and the bravest warrior in Japan. The warrior insisted on going home. saying that he had now finished what he had come to do and now must return. Seeing that the warrior has made his mind, the Dragon King begged him to accept a few small presents in token of their gratitude to him for killing their enemy, the centipede. The presents were as follows: a large bronze bell, a bag of rice, a roll of silk, and a cooking pot. Some of these presents were not ordinary but of magic power. For example, the single bag of rice had unlimited supply. However much was taken from it, it never grew less. The roll of silk never grew shorter, though time after time long pieces were cut off. The cooking pot was incredible too. No matter what was put in it, it cooked deliciously whatever was desired and without any fire. The fame of the warrior's fortune spread far and wide, and as there was no need for him to spend money on rice or silk or fire, he became rich and prosperous and was henceforth known as My Lord Bag of Rice. Let's see some of the highlights from the story. The warrior and the Dragon King both were motivated by wanting to achieve a positive outcome, like agreeing to help someone who mysteriously appeared in front of him, or preference to seek help from a hard-to-find brave warrior to kill the centipede rather than avoid the problem by fleeing their home with family. The Dragon King vividly described the ordeal him and his family are going through, and also saw an imminent danger to his family and his own life. By doing so, he pulled himself out of inaction and took charge of finding help in his fantastical ways. The warrior was out of arrows. How he got the most value out of the experience and his own past made the seemingly impossible task possible. But before everything else, either it's the warrior embarking on a search for an adventure or the Dragon King looking for help from humans, both of them took first steps towards a solution. Not doing something because you are afraid to get started isn't going to help you grow. Generally, fear of failure, also known as a tiki phobia, is when we allow the fear to stop us doing the things that can move us forward to achieve our goals. We all have it at some point in our life. How can we overcome it? In her 2018 post in Harvard Business Review titled How to Overcome Your Fear of Failure, Susan Peppercorn outlines four steps as redefine failure, set approach goals, create a fear list, focus on learning. In the end, we all have our dragons waiting on the bridge. We all are being chased by some centipede. And in the end, it feels like whatever we know will not be enough to succeed. But if we face our fears, redefine them, and apply the experience to the problem, there is a strong possibility that we also can attain an unlimited supply of positivity and happiness. That's it for this episode. Thanks for listening to A Walk Within. Be sure to subscribe, rate, and leave a review. It's very much appreciated. Also, can you tell me what happened to the large bronze bell that the warrior received? Let me know what were your highlights from the story. You can find the links to story and the post discussed in this episode in the description. Thank you.